This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Lena Dawes was 8 years old, she sat down in front of a television and she watched the made-for-TV movie Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. And it was as simple as that. She was hooked on heavy metal. As War Machine by Kiss, and from then on, Lena was a metalhead. And to this day, Lena's favorite band is still Judas Priest. But something that complicates this story, although perhaps it shouldn't, is the fact that Lena is a black woman. During her time in the metal scene, Lena has experienced a great deal of racism and sexism, and there are times that it has escalated to physical violence. She began reaching out to other black women involved in the heavy metal scene and asking them about their experiences. And that was when she realized she was not alone. Lena Dawes is author of What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. She's going to be giving a talk at Bull's Head Bookstore at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill later today. But first, she joins us on the program. Lena Dawes, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about the story, how you first came in contact with heavy metal, and tell us where you were.
Well, I grew up in outside of a small town called Kingston, Ontario, and that's about 3 hours east of Toronto, Ontario. And just grew up in a, you know, in an environment where I had a number of teenage boy neighbors who were really into Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, and a lot of the 70s classic hard rock, heavy metal. So I was really kind of drawn to that music from listening to their stereos over, you know, in the cornfield. But also I kind of tapped into the fact that these boys were kind of tough and mean, and the music was tough and mean. And that really excited me and made me think about music in terms of making you feel more powerful maybe than you actually are. So that's how I first got into it.
Is that? Do you think that explains maybe this seemingly instant connection with heavy metal at the time?
I think so. I think that, you know, heavy metal has always had this stereotype of, first of all, being kind of a working class, blue collar music for predominantly men who are, you know, kind of feeling frustrated by their day jobs, kind of want to listen to music to let out their aggressions that they can't get out during the day. And so I think that kind of translates into how people are still drawn to the music, which is more, it's not negative, but it's more for the positive energy and the positive aggression that you have the ability to let out in a space, in a forum in which we are not allowed to do that in other aspects of our lives.
Did you, now growing up in rural Ontario, and as one of, I would think, the few black women in that place, I mean, did you feel a bit like an outsider in growing up, or did you feel pretty well integrated into life there in Kingston?
No, it was pretty horrible. and I think this is why I, you know, really feel passionate about the subject, because the music was what got me through. If I didn't have kind of a space to, like, you know, if I couldn't go into my bedroom and like punch the wall or kick or scream, there would be no way I'd be able to let those frustrations out, because I never did fit in. I always felt like an outsider, but I knew that I desperately kind of needed something to make me feel better and to make me feel more empowered. At least for a temporary basis, than I felt in my everyday life.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, it's one thing to go to your room, close the door, punch a wall, listen to music, and feel that somebody is speaking to you. Were you able to express this or feel any kind of kinship with other metalheads in Kingston? In other words, when you hung around other white folk, could you kind of be part of the group because you were listening to the same music?
Yeah, strangely enough, I was very, very fortunate, because in high school, I ended up befriending a number of white dudes who were, like, some were jocks, some were what we call greasers, like people from all over the, you know, social class spectrum, simply because I knew more about heavy metal than they did. And it was so much fun to just, you know, hang out and talk about gossip and, like, what's going on, because back then, you know, we basically only knew the music through the limited records we got in the stores or through if we had a subscription to a music magazine. So I ended up having a lot of male friends, and our relationship was based on the fact that we loved to talk about metal. And so I was very fortunate, and I actually learned a lot through the friendships that I had back then.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that you can you have this common cultural theme, that there's something you can all talk about. And yet earlier you said, you know, metal is kind of a white working class male thing. And part of the frustration it expresses for white working class males is their sense that they're being put upon by minority races that are somehow taking their jobs and whatever else they fear the loss of. And that's a tension in that music, isn't it? And in that culture.
Exactly. And that's actually like one of the interviewees I spoke to for my book mentioned a very recent story about being involved in the punk hardcore scene in San Francisco. And she had a very good white male friend who said to her, you know what? I wish that when I went to a show, there was no women and no minorities there because I feel that I need a space. I need the space for myself, that other men need the space for themselves to be able to vent their frustrations in a way where they're not going to be ostracized or judged. And they also wanted a space where they could kind of react physically to the fact that they felt they were being discriminated against living in such a city that was so heavily populated by people from all over the world. So she was, you know, the woman that told me this was shocked, but we still have this emotion and this feeling that we need to have our own spaces. And, you know, music shouldn't be like that. I mean, music is for enjoyment, so we shouldn't have to, you know, racially or culturally segregate ourselves in order to really enjoy the music.
Well, what was it like for you when you started going to shows?
It was interesting. It was tough. Because I believe that especially when you're talking about metal, hardcore, and punk, it's extremely important to get out there and to enjoy the live experience. You know, I think that, you know, you can listen to a record, but there's nothing that beats watching the musicians perform. So I grew up, in my formative years were in the grunge scene, so I was going to see Soundgarden, White Zombie, Monster Magnet, and my best friend, who's another black woman who actually hates the music, but she would come with me. So there'd only be two of us. And so for the first year or two, I actually felt bad. You know, I felt almost embarrassed because I didn't like the dirty looks. I didn't like the glares. I didn't like that tension in the room of feeling like I didn't belong. But as time went on, I started getting angry and just kind of really questioning the behavior that, you know, I was getting from certain people. And then on the other hand, I still had my white male friends that I would actually go to shows with sometimes, and we would have a great time. But I never felt that, you know, I always kind of felt like the outsider. But the transition from kind of feeling sorry for myself and maybe even considering not going to shows versus getting angry and wanting to investigate it, which is why it led me to write this book.
Right. Hence the title, What Are You Doing Here? Your experience there. And it was more than just dirty looks. At times it got violent, right?
Yeah, I mean, at certain shows, it's gotten violent for me. I think what was even more disturbing was some of the women that I interviewed for this book. One in particular, she was knocked unconscious. She was punched in the face and knocked unconscious.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Another story was a girl in Atlanta was chased around the venue by a bunch of skinheads because they had warned her that she had to leave. They didn't want her there, and she basically said, no, forget that, and stayed, and so they chased her.
Yeah.
So you get these extreme stories of people just, you know, violently reacting to your presence. But for the most part, you also get a lot of positive stories about people really using the music as a catharsis in their own lives, to make themselves feel better and more importantly, to make themselves feel empowered.
Well, how have other black people viewed your love of heavy metal?
I think this has been one of the most frustrating things about this book. And I knew that, from the get-go, because I've been involved in the scene for over 20 years, almost 30 years, and have always done a lot of writing about this subject and trying to incorporate the Black communities that I do my social activism work with. So it's been very difficult, and there is a lot of resistance. And I think a lot of it has to go back to the stereotypes about heavy metal and hardcore and punk, about it being a white man's music. And it also, when you're talking about class and economics, blue collar means racist. Why would you want to hang out in an environment where these people hate your guts or could kill you or could beat you up? So there's that aspect of a fear of saying, why do you want to get involved in a scene where there's a propensity for violence? On the other hand, there's also a fear that by listening to kind of white-centric music or white, what is considered white-dominated music and music cultures, that you're losing your Black identity. That by listening to the music and by participating in it, there's something about it that says to you, you know, I'd rather be white. I don't want to be Black anymore. And there's a shame. Am I ashamed of who I am? And so all these questions are raised, and then people get very, you know, some people have been very aggressive in terms of saying, well, you know, you're going to lose your Black card if you're involved in the scene. So it's very hurtful. It's very personal to me. That's kind of something that has really kind of bothered me a lot. And an answer that, you know, it's something that I don't know if we can really solve it with this book, but at least people are talking about it.
And there are some Black performers, certainly Black women performing in heavy metal. Talk about them.
Oh, they're amazing. And the interesting thing is that I was able to get in touch and interview a number of women who are involved in metal, hardcore, and punk, or doing some kind of hybrid of, let's say, alternative hard rock and punk. But since the book has come out, I've actually met more women, women around the world. So for me, meeting women who are really putting their careers on the line and doing a musical genre that stereotypically, you know, record labels don't know how to deal with you, it's so inspiring to me, and the talent is just so incredible. So I've been, like, I think that's one of the best parts about this journey, has been meeting extremely strong women who want to play the music and perform the music that they're passionate about, but also realize that there's a lot of roadblocks in their way in terms of making it a full-time career. So, again, you have record labels that are looking at this Black woman and thinking she should be a hip-hop artist, and people just saying, I don't know if I could market you because white guys aren't going to think that you're talented or any good.
What's good is,
regardless of these stereotypes, these women are saying, you know what, I'm going to build my own career and I'm going to do what I want to do. It's not about the money. It's about being passionate about their art. So it's been fantastic.
Well, one of those artists is Militia, and here's a sample of her song, The Guilty One. That's a little sample of Militia, The Guilty One. I'm talking with the author of What Are You Doing Here? Lena Dawes is talking with me about that. Tell us a little bit about her experience and sort of how she's doing in the world of metal.
Oh, she's doing amazing. Militia is based out of New York, Manhattan. She has about 3 or 4 projects going on right now, but she's primarily known in the New York scene for being the lead singer of a Judas Priest tribute band called Judas Priestess. She also has a band called Swear on Your Life, and she's also doing a solo project, which The Guilty Ones comes from. So she's coming out with an album. Hopefully it will be out next spring. And she's just, to me, she's just an inspiration. She has worked so hard, within the New York scene, and she's really, making a name for herself right now.
You make a lot of great observations in this book, including one where you say that, in a sense, punk back in 75, the middle 70s, represented a kind of ethnic cleansing of rock music marked by its disdain for blues. This sort of gets us to this question of whether music really is the universal language. And I always question that because it seems to me that music in many ways is the ultimate marker of culture. It is not international. It is not the world's language. It's kind of who we are in these kind of smaller cultural senses. Or is there a tension between those two concepts of music?
I think there is a tension. And I mean, it's really hard because I do believe that, you know, one of the reasons why I have faced resistance from various Black communities is because, let's say, blues music is not only seen as just music, it's really seen as a narrative of, you know, the lives of African Americans who came before us, and also gives us, you know, kind of like an emotional bond in terms of how they struggled, how they strived, and how they survived. So there, it really has a connection to African American listeners in terms of the blues. So in some ways, yes, music is not just for an enjoyment, and there's, you know, there is a relevance that is there. But on the other hand, I believe that in terms of listening and in terms of participating as either a fan or even as a musician, it should be wide open. And one of the things I talk about a lot in this book, and I felt like I was demonizing hip-hop a little bit, but why is it more socially acceptable for whites to get involved in hip-hop / rap? Because rap music from the get-go was really kind of that. It was a contemporary narrative talking about the lives of African Americans and Latinos living in the inner city, and really used, and it was used as a storytelling mechanism to talk about stories that ordinarily, you know, popular culture would not want to hear. But now we have really accepted the fact that we do have a lot of extremely talented white and other non-Black artists who are making a lot of money from hip-hop culture.
Not to mention huge white audiences. Lena, thank you. Yeah. Thanks so very much for talking with you. It was a pleasure to talk with you. It's a great book.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Lena Dawes, author of What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. She's going to give a talk at Bull's Head Bookstore at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, today at 3:30. Thanks for listening. The State of Things is produced by Nicole Campbell, Alex Granados, Laura Lee, and Sean Wen. Bryson Russell, the intern. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.